This story comes from a book and movie entitled Heaven is for Real, written by Todd Burpo, Colton's father. On a family trip, 3-year-old Colton falls sick with aches and fever. For a short period of time, he seems to be getting better, but all of a sudden, he begins vomiting uncontrollably. The family rushes the boy to the hospital, where the doctors realize Colton has a ruptured appendix. And they whisk him away to the operating room, saying they'll do everything they can. In the waiting area, Colton's mother, Sonia, calls members of the church, asking them to activate a prayer circle. Colton's father, Todd, a Methodist minister, goes to the hospital chapel to pray by himself. Soon, Todd is yelling at God, saying he better not take his son away from him. The doctors say there were a couple of hours when the outcome was unclear, but Colton survives. Thankfully, in the days and weeks to follow, he goes on to a relatively quick and full recovery. Fast forward about 6 weeks after the surgery, family is driving down the highway when Colton shares his memories of Daddy yelling at God in the chapel. This is jarring because Colton's parents believe nobody ever told Colton what happened when he was in surgery under full anesthesia. Todd, the father, pulls a car over in the Arby's parking lot and asks Colton how he knows these things. Colton answers, "That is when I came out of my body and was floating over you guys. Mommy was talking on the phone in one room and you were yelling at God in another." During the months after his brush with death, Colton describes in impressive detail how while he was in heaven, which he is sure he was, he met his father's grandfather. Colton claims he met his own sister. This is the sister who died at birth, and Colton's parents claim they never told him about the pregnancy that ended in stillbirth, and they believe he had no other way of knowing. Colton has more stories about what happened during his operation. Many are consistent with the teachings of his church, such as he says he met Jesus, who was riding a pony. I knew Hal would laugh at that line. I don't say that to be funny, but I see how it is to some. Here at our church this month, our spiritual theme is source beyond ourselves. Now, I appreciate this phrase because I have come to increasingly think that terms like theist, agnostic, and atheist are labels which more often than not impede more than help in conversations about matters of ultimate importance. I find that people tend to check out fast and figure out which box or container is this conversation happening in, does it or does it not pertain to me. So if you're doing that, I invite you to come back in. The phrase source beyond ourselves may bring a variety of concepts to you. For me, the phrase evokes spirit of life, energy, love. It evokes something holy. Earlier this month, the now Reverend Joan Javier Duval said, "The phrase evokes something that transcends our ordinary material existence, beyond our individual thoughts and whims." Many of us come to religious community because we are searching for some more connection with that source, which we call by many names. We want to be connected to something bigger, something more powerful and transcendent than our individual lives. So within this theme of source beyond ourselves, I want to focus a bit on the topic of near-death experiences. You may believe that descriptions of near-death, like the one shared by Colton and his father Todd, who wrote the book about his son, are compelling. Or you may be highly skeptical and think that at best it's a misinterpretation. Or you may think and feel something different. I don't know. According to Gallup poll, about 8 million Americans report having had some kind of near-death experience. 8 million. Religious folks and scientists debate what can and cannot be proven about these experiences and the stories tied to them. Many scientists explore how the act of the brain shutting down creates unique experience. Dr. Andrew Newberg is a neuroscientist and professor at our own Thomas Jefferson University and Hospital. Newberg emphasizes that most ideas in this area, including his own, are ultimately guesswork. But given that, he says it's possible that visions of heaven are merely chemical and neurological events. When people are dying, two parts of the brain that usually work in opposition to one another often begin to work cooperatively with one another. When the sympathetic and the parasympathetic systems work together, like they do during the dying process, they can give sensations of slowing down, being out of body, and seeing things vividly. Now, I would love to see a study which breaks down the kind of experiences which are reported by people of different religious teachings or secular backgrounds. Specific cultural norms and religious teachings must affect these experiences. For example, Christians are more likely to see Jesus, they must be, just as they are more likely to see Jesus in a dream. Stories imparted on us in our particular cultural settings are sources beyond our individual lives, which affect us. So it's also important to remember that we are players in passing along those stories and code words to others. So we are part of Jeff's source beyond himself. And you all are part of the source beyond me. And that's true for our children and everybody. We have a role in this. But that's not the only factor. Raymond Moody wrote one of the first popular books on near-death experiences in 1975 and went on to establish an international association devoted to building global understanding on the phenomenon. In 2013, Mr. Moody told CNN that for people who have had such experiences, conviction about an afterlife transcends the particulars of religion. He went on to say, I've heard the same things in the United States, China, India, Japan, and on, about meeting a being of complete love and compassion, seeing light brighter than light. People use the same language all over the world for decades about these experiences. Emily Williams Kelly is a psychologist who teaches at the University of Virginia. She has a degree from that school, and she also has degrees from Duke and Edinburgh universities. And she has a theory which many other scientists disagree with strongly. Dr. Kelly says, consciousness exists even after normal brain function ceases. When asked if that means she thinks people really do go to another realm and science can prove it, she shrugs her shoulders and just says, studying near-death experiences should encourage us to be open to think that there may be a great deal more to mind and consciousness than we are certain of now. Be open to think there may be a great deal more to mind and consciousness than we are certain of now. I think it's highly probable that we are far from knowing everything there is to know about those. In many ways, this exploration harkens me back to the Unitarian minister and poet Ralph Waldo Emerson, who talked about an oversoul and an over-soul mind that connects individuals collectively, as well as connects us with nature. Universalists proclaimed that heaven is real and everybody is going. An infinitely loving God would not send finite human beings to an infinite hell. If you ask me today, does heaven literally exist in an afterlife? I don't know. I don't know. You may know. And that's the beauty of one of the beauties of our faith tradition. We don't pretend that the clergy has all the answers. But I will tell you that I believe heaven is real. At the very least, it's real right here and right now. And it may be much more than I certainly can comprehend. We are called to be grateful for its manifestations and help make them available whenever possible to others. Standing in the Emersonian naturalist tradition, Tom Ott preached recently about connecting with sources beyond ourselves. A dedicated fisherman, Tom said, "While on the water for the last 30-some years, three times I've had the blessing of coming upon the fluttering mating dance of butterflies, hundreds in a spiraling column 6 feet high. I have sat down in gravel each time and marveled at the pale yellow color along the edges that deepened in intensity through the center of the column until almost golden. It seemed at once an abstract painting and, because it was alive, a vision of the life force." A vision of the life force. Tom could have been Emerson seeing the glories of the sunrise, or you or me talking about the blue jays or the azaleas. I share the following questions from our small group curriculum this month. From what source do you draw wisdom, inspiration, and strength? And when do you feel the need for such sources beyond yourself? I do not know what happened to Colton. I look to that story with love and wonder. I do know that he and his family feel connected to God and a love powerful enough to mend many broken hearts and save many souls. That's the same source parents, parents of any sexual orientation, parents biologically or adoption, feel when they hold that baby wrapped in swaddling cloth and feel a love beyond belief. That's the love we feel for one another in this community and the connections that go in and out of this community, out to the entire world. We are connected in so many ways. We cannot keep track. It's the source of life Tom feels with the vortex of butterflies. It's the compassion we feel for friends going through health problems or isolation or despair. It's the joy we feel when people show courage, skill, and grace. This source of light goes back at least 13 billion years to the Big Bang. It goes back almost 4 billion years to those first cells forming in the waters. Behold the miracle. Share the miracle. May we drink the nectar of each hour. And may we be of service and offer a cup to thirsty friends. Blessings be. Amen.